Daily Tech Thursday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Hello, everyone. This is Lori Boyer, host of the show. Taylor Chalstrom will have a report today on how to increase adoption of soil water measurement technology. Vicki Boyd will have a report where she talks to a cherry grower near Linden about the trials and tribulations of this year's crop. I'll have national and regional agricultural news, and I'll start us off with regional ag news right after this word from our sponsor.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
In regional agricultural news, as ongoing port congestion and persistent shipping obstacles continue to block movement of California agricultural goods, farmers and exporters face bulging warehouses and dwindling cash flow that threaten to sink some businesses. Tree nuts, fresh produce, dairy products, and other California farm commodities struggle to find rides on vessels and containers in which to ship them, with ocean carriers rushing to set sail empty rather than hauling agricultural exports. Agricultural exporters say their shipping problems, which trace to pandemic related supply chain disruptions that started in 2020, have only gotten worse. More shipping companies had notified them they won't stop at the Port of Oakland to pick up containerized farm products, which account for 60% of total exports through the port. The companies opt instead to return ships directly to Asia following long delays at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Only one ocean carrier, Mediterranean Shipping Company, so far has committed to servicing the Port of Oakland. That, according to Roger Isom, president and CEO of the Western Agricultural Processors Association and California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association. The Northern California port saw 67,910 empty containers leave its shores during the first 2 months of this year. That compared to 37,263 empties during the same time in 2020, according to a letter that agricultural groups, including the California Farm Bureau, sent to the Biden administration recently. The letter further noted that 3 out of 4 containers at U.S. ports returned to Asia empty. Because ships continue to bypass the Oakland port, exporters say the opening in March of a new pop-up yard for pickup of empty containers has offered limited relief. The temporary hub, located off-site of the port, allows shippers to stage export loads while avoiding busy marine terminals where most empty containers are stored. Most recently, there were more than 500 containers in a yard. According to spokesman Robert Bernardo, the port saw 83 ships stopping in Oakland in March, compared to 93 a year ago. Reduced vessel arrivals were due in part to a COVID-related port shutdown in Shanghai. Though the port has enough empty containers to cover current demand, Bernardo says supplies remain in constant flux. He said he expects inventory to tighten as imports from China begin to resume. And aside from dealing with a shortage of containers, agricultural shippers say they struggle to secure bookings, which often get canceled or rolled, meaning the cargo wasn't loaded onto the scheduled vessel, usually because there is no room. In their letter, farm groups are asking the Biden administration to help convene a meeting with ocean carriers to negotiate a restoration of export services immediately. The problem is urgent, they said, because in a matter of months, farms will begin harvesting new crops while what's left of last year's crop remains in storage due to the inability to ship. Almond shippers would need to move 1.4 billion pounds of the nut across domestic and export markets before August to meet 2021's leftover crop. Moving such a volume would require 31,000 to 34,000 containers, according to farm groups. According to the National Agricultural Statistics Service Pacific Regional Field Office, over 147,000 U.S. farms produced and sold food locally through direct marketing practices, resulting in $9 billion in revenue in 2020, according to the local food marketing practices data released recently by USDA's National Ag Statistics Service. The data covers both fresh and value-added foods such as meat and cheese. The more than 40,000 farms that sold food directly to institutions and intermediaries intermediates brought in the most revenue at $4.1 billion. This was followed by over 113,000 operations with direct-to-consumer sales such as on-farm stores and farmers markets at $2.9 billion. Sales directly to retailers accounted for $1.9 billion from more than 24,000 operations nationwide. The top five states by value for total direct food sales were number one, California, at $1.43 billion, followed by Pennsylvania, New York, Michigan, and Maine. Most farms that sold directly to consumers sold through outlets such as on-farm stores. California led the nation in sales directly to consumers, earning $284 million. Data also showed that 78% of U.S. farms sold their direct-to-market produce exclusively within 100 miles of the farm, while an additional 19% sold partially within and beyond 100 miles. A unique partnership between two Southwest Riverside County neighbors and educators has left a lasting imprint on Orange Vista High School students who are involved in the school's viticulture pathway. On Orange Vista High School students of the school's viticulture pathway. After 4 years of work, Daffo Winery CEO and winemaker Damian Daffo and Orange Vista High School Assistant Principal Lou Randall, together with hundreds of students, are ready to share the fruits of their labor. The project began in 2018 with the planting of 980 donated Cabernet Sauvignon vines. In 2020, the first harvest was crushed and barreled. Now in 2022, Daffo has proclaimed the product is ready to bottle and will be debuted for sale later this summer. A portion of the proceeds from the sales will return to the school in this event, which has been a long time coming. A fundraising gala for the program will take place on Saturday, August 6th. In 2018, Daffo and his neighbor Randall conceived a school program aimed at introducing a younger generation to hands-on farming, chemistry, and biology through real work in a vineyard. More than just a fun agricultural activity, the program incorporates many different technical and educational components that work in tandem. Daffo has helped students learn the intricacies of the wine business from farm to production. Students of the viticulture program learn about growing and maintenance, and a video production program that documents the entire life of the grape from seed to bottle has been developed. The engineering and manufacturing program certifies students with the FAA Part 107 to operate drones in a vineyard. And a design competition for the bottle label is currently underway in the graphics and design program. 100 cases of the inaugural wine will be bottled in July and released in August. According to Rabobank Research, the sustained popularity of Easy Peel citrus varieties should result in surpassing navel oranges in the next few years as the most consumed fresh citrus in the U.S. In an April report, the company showed South America has greatly increased its exports in the past 5 years. Since the mid-1990s, U.S. mandarin consumption has surpassed domestic production, and now imports account for about one-third of domestic consumption. Acreage in California has increased more than six-fold in the past 20 years, reaching 67,000 acres in 2021, while acreage in Florida has declined due to phytosanitary pressures, according to the report. And the report projects a favorable year for Easy Peel citrus in the U.S., but not for Europe. The 2022 season will present some extremes of shortages in the U.S. and potential oversupply in Europe, while demand in the U.S. market will remain strong and U.S. domestic citrus supply will hit a record low. Russia was a strong market for Easy Peel citrus. With the Ukraine war limiting exports there, the rest of Europe could see an oversupply situation. Easy Peel citrus are generically known as mandarins and also include clementines, tangerines, tangelos, and more.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Taylor Chalstrom on how to increase adoption of soil water measurement technology.
The effects of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act and California's ongoing drought continue to take their toll on growers in the state, leading more and more of them to turn to water-related technologies they might not have considered in the past in order to save every last drop. Growers are using the technologies for things like soil water measuring, controlling, and sampling.
People aren't just using soil moisture, some are using ET. Some are using, you know, audio or not audio, but visual, you know, shots above the field, you know, satellite imagery. There's all kinds of things out there that are really helping growers become more efficient. Let me look specifically. I mean, they have stuff out there right now that also, you know, looks at, you know, sizing the trunk of the tree or the fruit. There's all kinds of different stuff. But the important thing to realize is whether it's soil moisture, ET, or the fruit sizing, or you know, whatever you got out there, or a neutron probe, it's all a piece of the puzzle, right? And you have to put all this information together in a efficient way, where and in a way that's not going to overload you, because if you have too much info, then you know you can't make a decision, right? Yes. So having something simple and something that tells you, hey, hey, we need to water now, or we don't need to water now, and this is how much water we have, and this is how much we don't have. Our system in particular is really simple at doing that. But like I said, there's a lot of good companies out there that are doing the same thing. And the growers just need to look. They're easy to find. They really are. And the adoption rate, I know for you know a lot of growers all over the world, it's not just in California, but the adoption rate is actually really, really low. And I heard one figure one time that really only 20% of growers just in California, which is the most innovative, you know, most innovative growers in the world, only 20% actually use some form of moisture management. But no, anyway, so there's a lot of good companies out there. And I think we're all trying to do our part to help the growers, you know, become more efficient and also, you know, be responsible, you know, if you want to call it that.
That was Jacob Moreno with Aerometer. While adoption of these types of water measurement technologies are going up, the rate is still slow, and Moreno said education is the best way to get growers on board.
What we have to do is get growers to see it and not be afraid of it. And most of them aren't. But, you know, I do a lot of workshops for, you know, different growers around different areas. We do once or twice, I think I've done three or four, some seminars for a bunch of Hmong growers in the Fresno area. And those are great, you know, those are great, great events. And, you know, these growers, they know what they're doing. They're very smart, but you know, you have an extra tool to help. It's only going to make you more efficient. It's only going to make you better. It's only going to make you produce more. So, education, I would say, and just really getting out there. And then the other thing is too, you know, sometimes, like I said, there's a lot of companies that have come out. Right. There's a lot of different sensors and this and that. And I told you, sometimes they last a year and they're gone. Sometimes that puts a bad taste in people's mouths. So we got to try to, you know, try to make sure that the companies that have been around for a long time and continue to have good reputations, that, you know, they get out there and really kind of explain and educate. And I think if we can do that, I think we'll see a lot more adopted use across the country, the world, whatever have you.
When Moreno talks to a grower that's interested in implementing some of these newer water measurement technologies, he's not asking them why they want to implement them. Of course, they're trying to save water. Rather, he encourages them to not only implement them, but to take patience when reading initial measurements and wait to see whether they can or cannot act on a certain issue.
After we put the instruments or the sensors, whatever you want to say, when we put them in the ground, a lot of guys right away, they want to look at the readings and then they want to change what they're doing right away. And I tell them, let's not do that. Because what I want to do is I want these sensors to be a validation or an invalidation of what you're actually doing. So I want you to, you know, if you've been irrigating a certain way for a while, I want you to continue to do that. And then let's take a look at the readings and let's see what the data says over time. And hey, maybe you've been doing unbelievable, like, you know, you're an irrigation savant, right? But, or maybe we could be a little bit better, you know? So the implementation of the sensors has always been, like I said, when I tell them, I just said, look, this is just, we're going to see, are we doing good? Are we doing bad? From there, after a couple months, you know, after kind of seeing what we're doing, then we can make adjustments. Because if we try to do it right away, right now, and maybe they don't fully understand the readings or, you know, the relationship between, you know, dry and wet and all that stuff, you know, just all the stuff that comes, you know, with our information. If they don't get it right away or grasp it right away, all it's going to do is drive them crazy. And then, you know, in that, you know, 1 or 2 months, they're going to say, well, this doesn't work. I don't want to use it anymore. You know, and we could be losing that just simply because, you know, we're not patient enough, and we just got to be patient.
Adoption success of these water measurement technologies also relies on them being easy to use, echoing the notion of keeping it simple, stupid.
You know, sometimes when you open up, when there's a company that starts a brand new software company, and they say this software does everything, does the latest and greatest. Well, you open it up and you don't know how to use it because it has so many widgets and it has so many drop down. You know, everything's just crazy. And you're like, yeah, if I could, you know, take a 6-week course, maybe I could use this software, you know, but that's part of the problem. I think sometimes people want to be too much to everybody. If people make products that are just, you know, look, they do this, they can do this. And again, it goes back to education. If they can, you know, instruct the grower how to use it efficiently, then I think we're good. But it really, almost all these questions kind of tie back to education. Right. You know, and that's why we're here. Right. We're here to kind of just get a little bit of information.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In national agriculture news, the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer improved last month. Here's the full report.
Thanks for joining us for the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer survey results from the April 2022 survey. I'm Jim Mintert, Director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, and I'm going to share with you the highlights of this month's survey. The Ag Economy Barometer rose slightly this month to a reading of 121, up from 113 last month, but that still leaves the barometer well below where it was this time last year when the reading was at 178. There was a modest uptick in both the Index of Current Conditions and the Index of Future Expectations, but again, those indices both remain well below where they were this time last year. The Farm Financial Performance Index improved significantly this month to a reading of 95. That's up compared to 87 last month and 83 in both January and February. So producers are starting to feel somewhat better about their farm's financial situation in 2022 compared to 2021. The Farm Capital Investment Index, however, did not improve. It stayed at 36. That's the lowest reading we've ever had on the Farm Capital Investment Index. And over 40% of the producers in this month's survey continue to say that purchase plans are being impacted by low farm machinery inventory levels. The Long-Term Farmland Value Expectation Index declined to a reading of 141 this month. That's down 5 points compared to last month when the reading was 146. And the index is down about 13% compared to its peak last fall when the reading was at 161. Farmers continue to experience difficulty obtaining inputs to plant the 2022 crop. This month, 11% of the producers in the survey said that they had received notice from an input supplier that the supplier would be unable to deliver inputs they had already purchased for use in the 2022 crop season. And the top problem cited by farmers was herbicides, followed by farm machinery parts, fertilizer, and insecticides. Farmers continue to tell us that their top concern for their farming operation in the year ahead is higher input cost, followed by availability of inputs, with almost 20%, roughly 1 in 5 producers in the survey, telling us they're concerned about the availability of inputs. We continue to ask farmers about what impact the war in Ukraine is going to have on U.S. agriculture, and producers continue to tell us that the number one concern they have is the impact on input prices, especially fertilizer. In this month's survey, we asked producers to look ahead to the 2023 crop season and ask them what change they expect to see in input prices for the 2023 crop compared to 2022. 36% of the producers in this month's survey said they expect to see 2023 input prices rise by 10% or more, and 21% said they expect to see an input price rise of 20% or more, and that's on top of the very large price increases experienced for the 2022 crop. That wraps up the highlights for this month's Ag Barometer survey. You can obtain a copy of their complete report with all the details at purdue.edu/agbarometer, and you can also learn more about the details in this month's results on our podcast, the Purdue Commercial AgCast podcast, which is available on the Center for Commercial Agriculture's website, purdue.edu/commercialag. On behalf of the Center for Commercial Agriculture, I'm Jim Mintert. Thanks for joining us.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack has announced that the USDA is accepting more than 2 million acres in offers from agricultural producers and landowners through the Conservation Reserve Program's general signup. It is the first of the program's multiple signups occurring this year. With about 3.4 million acres expiring this year, Vilsack encourages producers and landowners to consider the grassland and continuous signups, both of which are currently open. The conservation programs are voluntary, and at the end of the day, producers are making market-based decisions as the programs was designed to allow and encourage. Producers submitted re-enrollment offers for just over half of the expiring acres, similar to the rate in 2021. Offers for new land into general CRP were considerably lower than last year's numbers, with fewer than 400,000 acres being offered versus more than 700,000 acres last year. Producers with accepted acres still need to develop a conservation plan before enrolling on October 1st. CNH Industrial, the company behind Case IH and New Holland Equipment, saw workers in Racine, Wisconsin and Burlington, Iowa go on strike this past Monday. In a statement, the company says they are disappointed that the parties were unable to reach an agreement and that the United Auto Workers have decided to call a strike. They are working to resolve the issue and will continue to negotiate in good faith, trusting the union to do the same. UAW workers say they called for a strike after the company failed to present an agreement that met member demands and needs. Over 1,000 UAW members have now set up pickets in the Racine and Burlington locations. The Environmental Protection Agency has delivered its final rules setting the 2021 and 2022 renewable fuel standard renewable volume obligations to the White House Office of Management and Budget. The rule delivered on April 29th also revises the existing RVO for 2020. The OMB review is the final step before the rulemaking is published. In December 2021, EPA released a proposed rule that included RVOs for 2021 and 2022. The rule also intended to revise the already finalized 2020 RVO, something the U.S. biofuel industry empathetically does not support. Biodiesel Magazine says with the final rule now under OMB, it looks like the EPA will be able to finalize the RVO rulemaking by June 3rd. That would keep EPA in compliance with a consent decree related to legal challenge by Growth Energy, which sought an injunction requiring the EPA to promptly issue the RVOs for 2021 and 2022. The concept of people's gardens is making a big comeback. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
One, two, three. Open. All right.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack wielding a giant-sized pair of ceremonial scissors, officially opening what has been known as the People's Garden right off the mall in Washington, D.C. here, a place where visitors to the Smithsonian and the Capitol can see all kinds of foods being grown and learn about agriculture.
This is going to be a place that's going to attract a lot of attention.
Not just in the nation's capital. Vilsack said the plan is to spread this People's Garden concept, for starters, to communities within 17 big U.S. cities.
We're going to have people working with those communities to establish opportunities for community gardens and urban agriculture.
And of course, for this garden here in Washington,
our hope is that it inspires others to go back to their communities to start something like this.
Gary Crawford reporting from the People's Garden in Washington, D.C. for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
My Ag Life Daily News reporter Vicki Boyd is up next. She talks to a cherry grower near Linden about the trials and tribulations of this year's crop. That's right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
California's cherry crop has been hit with a 1-2 punch in some parts of the state this spring with a late February freeze, followed by rain and hail in April. Case Samuel, who farms cherries and walnuts with his two brothers and father near Linden, said the cold weather definitely affected their crop, but it didn't chill the growth of Sunrise Fresh Fruit and Nut Company, the Samuel's value-added operation near Linden that dries number two fruit, including cherries.
Mother Nature threw us the biggest curveballs of all. We had record-setting heat in February. Some days touched 80 degrees, and that really kick-started the trees off really early, and I've been farming full time now for 7 years, and I've only had one season where it hasn't rained on our fruit, or we haven't had some sort of significant issue develop during bloom time. But this year with that heat, the trees started early, and then of course we had a late frost, and that late frost really did some big damage, especially in the Lodi area. Linda didn't get hit too bad. Patterson, Tracy are okay, but predominantly in the Lodi area, there's a lot of trees out there that were probably a popcorn phase, and the frost really took a toll on them.
Before the mid-April storms, the California Cherry Board estimated this year's crop to be about 5.5 million 18-pound cartons. That compares to the more than 10.1 million cartons the California industry packed in 2021. Based on his observations, Case said the estimate was a bit optimistic even before the late April storms.
I honestly thought that was a pretty far number, or a hard number to reach. 5.5 million boxes is pretty optimistic. But one thing the Cherry Board has done in the past, and they do this really well, is we try to set a bar to what we think we hit. If we have this amount of fruit, we were able to sell it. The worst thing that can happen to the cherry industry, is happening quite often, is when we come out with an underestimate and then we surprise ourselves and pack 7 million boxes. But 5.5 million from out the gate was very optimistic. The fruit was never there to begin with. It's pretty, 5.5 million was just too much. I think 4.5 was a much more conservative number.
Case has been farming with his family for 7 years, and he said he can't remember a harvest when it didn't rain. He also serves as vice president of sales for Sunrise Fresh. When he was at the Hort Show last December in Washington State, a type of protective netting for cherry trees caught his eyes. The Samuels applied it this season to the Rainiers, a premium cherry variety known for its thin skin, and it appeared to have worked. But Case said their other varieties that were nearby and weren't netted weren't as lucky.
A little bit of backstory there. My good friend and I, Max Capella of Capella Tree Sales, went to the horticulture show in Yakima in December this past year. And I was walking around the show, and I walked by a booth called DrapeKnit. Dean Benson is the North American sales rep there. And I started talking to him, said I'm a grower in California, and you know, we care about rain. He said, well, hey, we've got this experimental netting that just came out. There's two other farmers that will be applying in the Yakima Valley. We'd really like you to try it out in California. It's like, sure, why not? I bought it there on the spot. I didn't call my brother. I didn't call Zach or Jake to run it by and make sure it's okay. I just did it because I'm just tired of, like I said previously, I've been farming 7 years now. It's rained all 6 years on our cherry crop. I haven't picked one cherry crop without rain yet. Except for last year, but last year doesn't really count. So long story short there, the netting worked. It prevented all hail damage on our Rainiers, which is what we were most concerned about with this previous storm. We have minimal cracking issues, less than 1%. It was a heck of a gamble because it cost about $5,500 an acre to put on our trees, but it saved our crop. So hopefully it pays off. But overall, when that thunderstorm rolled through two Thursdays ago, I believe now, about 2 miles wide, 15 miles long with, you know, we got about 1.5 inches of rain in 2 hours and 1/4 inch hail for 20 plus minutes will really do some damage. But the Rainiers look really good so far. Block directly next to my Rainiers has some hail damage, but they are corals, so they are healing through it. They weren't at a vulnerable stage, like really green. And we didn't really get severe hail damage there. I mean, when I talk about the 2 miles wide, I mean, it was down to the foot. It was missing some blocks and hitting others harder. We didn't get a direct shot with really dense hail for a long period of time, but we do have some damage on our Bings and corals next to that block. Then we have another block closer in Linden that's 100% crop loss. Like, we won't pick a single piece of fruit off of it because it has so much hail damage.
Case credits his grandfather, Ernie Podesta, and his father, Jim Samuel, for the family's dry cherry business. Jim actually developed a proprietary method where they dry the entire cherry, pit and stem still attached. This allows them to keep up with the inflow of fruit during the season. This year, Case said they will likely receive a lot of the cherries that were hail damaged and can't go fresh.
My dad and my grandfather, Ernie Podesta, had a company previously before Sunrise Fresh called Cherry Products. They were Maraschino cherry industry. And in 1996, my dad and my grandfather wanted to dry some fruit. So they literally took some screen doors, put some fruit on it, sun-dried it out back, and they forgot about it for 6 months. And then they went over there, probably, I think it was in October, my dad said, and this is in 1996, the year I was born, and picked it up, put it in bags, and they forgot about it for 4 or 5 years. And then in 2003, my grandma's freezer failed, and they found these bags of fruit. And my dad's like, hey, we should really try to get this a go again. That was in 2003. We dried 40,000 pounds that year of number two culls, which prevents that fruit from being thrown away into the landfills or go to cattle feed. And the last year, Sunrise Fresh dried a little over 10 million pounds of culls. This year, we're planning on double that. Our entire industry will probably hit about 45 million pounds of culls. What's unique about our dried cherries, they have no added sugar or preservatives. That being said, our competition, a Montmorency Tart, has an upwards of 18 grams of added sugar per serving. That's the industry standard. That's the way it's been grown year in, year out for the last 50 years. What makes our dry cherries unique, besides that they are single ingredient, is that we dry up the pit and stem still attached to it. It goes through a proprietary process to remove that pit and stem, but what that allows us to do is dry 15 to 20 million pounds within a 95 to 100 day window. Previously, you'd have to fresh pit everything before it's dried, but with us having this new unique ability that my dad did develop and patent, it's really opened up a brand new industry. And that industry is actually saving a lot of this fruit that does have hail damage on it this year that prevents it from being thrown away, at least. It doesn't really give the farmer too much of a monetary income, but it prevents the tree from having stress and pretty much just prevents the fruit from being thrown away.
Most of their dried cherries are used as ingredients in items such as trail mixes and snack foods, but Case said they are also working to get more involved with food service and even school lunches.
Right now, we predominantly go into ingredients, trail mixes, fruit bars, things like that. They're very multi-purpose. We can use them in multiple different facets, but primarily trail mixes is the number one. They're great snacks by themselves. We're really getting into the industry of food service and school lunch programs. We're trying to provide kids that have hard access to fruits and vegetables and fresh produce a way to obtain those nutrients day in and day out at a cheaper value then still has good nutrients with them. But primarily as a snack and in trail mixes and fruit bars is what the dried fruit goes into right now.
Cherries are known for their beneficial health properties, including being rich in anti-inflammatory properties and antioxidants. But the Samuel's cherries also contain no added sugar, unlike tart cherries grown and dried elsewhere. Packages of their fruit contain one ingredient, cherries, with no added preservatives either.
So cherries are really good for a multitude of things. They have a natural amount of melatonin that helps regulate sleep schedules. They have high amounts of probiotics that help regulate your health system. They're very good for gout. They help fight gout. I have a lot of my current clients that are fruit procurement officers for their companies have gout, and they eat our cherries one ounce bag a day, and their gout symptoms have virtually disappeared, which is a pretty big selling point for people with that issue. They're a great substitute for diabetics since we have no added sugars in them. It's natural sugars, so you can really eat a lot of these and stay within your means.
In addition to selling their dried cherries to commercial customers, the Samuels also sell them on Amazon. Case said you can either search using Sunrise Fresh or just type in dried cherries.
So we are the number one selling dried fruit on Amazon. You can get our bag anywhere in 2 days. We are Prime verified, so our dried cherries are available anywhere in the nation. And in fact, we are launching into Canada and Mexico the next month, and it will be available in the EU on Amazon within the next 3 months. Sunrise Fresh Dried Fruit Company is our label, or you can type in dried cherries. We're the top five selling dry cherries on Amazon, so search dried cherries, we'll pop up.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.